Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 1069.JB3910, certificate number 27983. Rhinos in Europe.
Now, as we know, rhinos in Europe. As we know, Africa is the cradle of life.
Yes.
And it seems to be a theme of Omnibus that it shares its bounty of animal life as well with the world. We have done entries on Africa giving its hippos to South America, whether they should be there or not. Africa giving its camels to North America, whether they should be there or not.
Giraffes to zoos all around the world?
We haven't done an Omnibus about that, but we could.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if African zoos, however many of them there are, if they have like polar bears and wolverines and timber wolves.
They have like a big savanna thing, but it doesn't have any actual savanna animals because they're bored. They could see a zebra anywhere.
Sure, they have those, but it's a savanna that's made to look like a northern forest.
It's got buffalo.
It's got like a bald eagle.
It's a zebra, but they put moose antlers on it in hopes that no one will notice.
Africa's got a lot of interesting animals, but they don't have all the interesting animals.
They have more interesting animals than, you know, I don't want to say than is their right, because good for them.
Sure.
But they certainly seem to be disproportionately blessed in unusual animals. And the ancients were well aware of this.
Mm-hmm.
And they were fascinated by the stories of...
You mean the ancients that weren't living in Africa?
Right. When I say the ancients, I mean in classical times.
Yes.
They were fascinated by the mix of natural science and history and mythology that came to them as far as the wildlife of Africa. They had heard of horses that were striped black and white and camels that had long necks and were spotted like leopards. And some of these animals, I think the mountain gorilla was believed to be a cryptid as late as... you know, the late 19th century. It was found that when mountain gorillas were real, people were like, oh, wow, Pliny wasn't lying about big apes.
That seems like
wandering the highlands.
1,900 years more than was necessary.
You're saying you would have found mountain gorillas sooner than that?
I mean,
what year do you think you would have decided mountain gorillas were real?
When the Portuguese arrived on the Ivory Coast, I think I might have sent a couple of people inland on an exploratory mission.
A guerrilla raid, as it were?
Among other things. I would have gone looking for...
And you wouldn't have been slaving. You would have had more free time because you would be an enlightened visitor.
Yeah.
You'd be like, teach me your ways, Africa. I'm a Peter Gabriel type.
I hear that there is... Well, no, I would have said like, I'm looking for Livingston. He won't arrive for several hundred years.
You're a little early.
But no, I would say, are there giant... What did Pliny say they were shaped like? Do you remember his description?
I think he responsible for calling giraffes camel leopards? I don't know what he said about gorillas. Mm-hmm. He had a lot to say about rhinoceroses, as we'll see.
I mean, Hannibal was able to muster enough elephants
right
to cross the Alps, and there are no elephants in Morocco. So he would have had to have gotten those elephants all the way up over the Sahara.
Right.
How did he even do that?
Maybe they went around.
They went around. That's what it was. That's what it was.
You had to go around back then.
They waited.
So if today we consider the odd history of Europeans learning about the rhinoceros, we only have three continents remaining, because we're not going to do anything about African animals visiting Africa. That would be ludicrous.
Right.
But we still need a show about African animals visiting Asia, Australia, and Antarctica.
I imagine the Persians were pretty interested in these
giraffes.
Animals too, right? And the Mughals.
Yeah, as we'll see, it was typical back then for wealthy potentates and panjandrums of all kind to keep a menagerie. And one of the ways you would show off your earthly power to your subjects and your rivals would be the exoticism of the gifts, the animal gifts that were given you.
Right, like those guys down in the desert Southwest that have a bunch of white tigers in a cage behind their gas station.
Yeah, you know, to other gas stations, that really shows that they're the most regal of the gas stations on that stretch of freeway. I should note at this point that the initial story of a lot of these animals making it to Europe is not a pretty one.
Oh,
and
dear.
I say this because, you know, we recently did shows about the near extinction and then reintroduction of wolves to the American West, and one about the actual extinction of camels in the American West. And both of these stories featured not nice things happening to animals. Wolves got shot by hunters. Wolves ate elk. Camels got mistreated by their cavalry owners and subsequent maybe prospector owners. I'm only vaguely remembering the show. So I was pretty high.
We haven't even talked about the buffalo or the passenger pigeon.
Terrible things happen to animals all the time, and some of them are done by animals to other animals. But there is a certain kind of listener that's not going to want to hear that. If you're a descendant, well, not of the passenger pigeon because there are none, but if you're a descendant of an elk, if you're an intelligent elk, you're going to be scratching your antlers in dismay when we talk so dispassionately about wolves eating your forefathers. And there's certainly a lot of people that, you know, well, nobody, let's be honest.
Let's be honest, finally.
Everyone.
After 520 episodes.
I'm going to be candid with you, John. I don't like it when people are cruel to animals.
Okay.
I think we should be, I'm just putting this out there, and I'm, you know, if I'm being brutally honest, I think people should be kind and compassionate to animals and should not be cruel to them.
Well, now I've got our sign here, not compatible with Marxism or compatible with Marxism.
Animal cruelty. Well, I don't know. What did Marx or Engels have anything to say about the evil capitalists doing bear baiting in London trading squares?
The last place I saw somebody with a trained bear in a public square dancing.
Was it a communist country?
While being whipped was a recently former communist country. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't think of Marxist countries as having particularly
That's one of the cases in which they betrayed the ideals of the revolution.
Right.
As we're often covering on the show.
Sure. We've never had a real communist country.
All the backyard smelters and all the five-year plans and the forced famines.
It's all the the many exceptions that ultimately prove the rule.
Killed millions of Ukrainians and several bears.
Yes. Ukrainian bears, even.
But it's, and the Venn diagram overlaps at all the dead Ukrainians.
So I guess our question whether or not it is compatible with Marxism does not apply here. We're gonna use this in a separate context. Are you nice to animals or not?
But we did have listeners who were annoyed or outraged even that we would talk about bad things happening to, say, wolves and camels without warning people at first.
Right.
That the entry would include bad things happening to wolves and camels.
I think they were hurt first. They were sad, and then they went through the five stages of grief.
And they finally got to outrage, the final one.
Mm-hmm.
After acceptance comes.
They got to outrage.
The final Kubler-Ross stage.
Before
internet
they posted.
Outrage.
Yeah, they went through. One of the new stages of grief is post.
Well, I mean, we live in an age where there's justly a lot more concern about animal cruelty than any point in the past in which it was usually encouraged.
Why is it just?
It was a fundamental point.
Why is it just that there is more interest in it?
You said
justly more interest in animal niceness.
It would have been just for there to be this much interest all the time.
Oh, I see. sadly, all those times that people were throwing puppies down a well.
All that injustice mounted. And finally, we have the, making up for it, we have the juster era in which it is not good to go to a bullfight.
So you're saying in whatever way the rhinoceros appears later on in this show, there is a chance that the story involves not just people loving and cherishing and pampering rhinoceros.
No, there is going to be, in the Roman Empire portion of the story, there is going to be appalling cruelty to animals that surprised me, a person who had seen Gladiator several times.
There's a lot of appalling cruelty, full stop, in the Roman Empire.
Well, that's the thing. But by today's standards, we could do a show about Roman soldiers going to bloody deaths and not have anybody bat an eye.
What about Jews going to bloody deaths at the hands of Roman soldiers?
Well, that's worse.
Yes, worse.
But when a horse meets a death on the battlefield.
Of course.
Do you know this website, Does the Dog Die?
I like it already.
It's just a list of, pre-warning so that you go into a movie knowing if it'll have any of the following things. And I think originally the site was founded to tell you if the dog dies. But now it's got, movies can be hashtagged for any number of offensive content, some of which is the actual, things you could actually have a traumatic trigger for. You know, there are lots of people who would like to know if there's sexual assault in a movie or, for reasons of their own mental health.
But I punch out of any movie that has kids die in it as a way of ramping up the dramatic tension. If you're killing kids, I don't have time for your plot.
I have a real problem with violence against women as a how to make the hero mad of a thing. You.
What is the R word? Because it's here. I just went to Does the Dog Die? And one of the 110 categories is the R word.
What if today we said intellectually disabled?
Oh, I see. R word.
What if there's a movie that used a more antiquated and offensive term?
I see. I get you now.
But if you scroll down the list, you'll find that this site will warn you if a movie has a clown, if it has someone chewing loudly, if it has a baby crying.
They don't like spiders, but here's one I wouldn't have expected. A dragon dies.
Yeah, see?
See, you wouldn't think like...
I mean, if you've in your past you have dragon-related trauma, you don't want to see that when you go for a fun night out at the movies.
I don't want... I mean, there are
It'll remind you too much of your childhood dragon dying.
A lot of things here that I could get. A horse dies. There are snakes in the movie. You don't want to see that. There are bugs.
The fact that we all speak the language of mental health very sensitively today is a wonderful innovation, but it has led to a small group of people that will use the language of trauma to describe things that are not, in fact, trauma at all, like I had to go to a movie with loud chewing in it.
Here's someone who says they have a crippling fear of stairs, and they hate to see movies where someone falls down stairs.
If I had a fear of stairs, I would like to see that kind of movie. I would hate to see a movie where someone uses stairs successfully because it would remind me of my own phobias. And also, if you don't like stairs, a movie where somebody falls downstairs is like a public service announcement. It warns people that they should be like you and have, more trepidation about stairs.
Some of these, I realize I don't want to see that. People whose teeth are damaged in the movie. I don't want to see that.
None of them are good things. No. Like, it's not like, hey, please warn me if this movie has a delicious chocolate cake.
No.
Or a happy family playing with those 4th of July sparklers.
Oh, this is different, though. A child's dear toy is destroyed.
Wow.
So if a child's toy is destroyed, that's something that someone
would hope to avoid.
Yeah. I don't want to see that movie.
And again, it's not just that these are all bad things. It's these things that are non-starters. These are like, I will not stream that movie if the teddy bear gets it.
I was at my house the other day and a book fell off the shelf, as they do sometimes.
Because your house is haunted.
Mm-hmm. Fell off the shelf onto my head. And it was John Steinbeck's The Red Pony.
It's okay if it was Mein Kampf. You can.
It was Mein Kampf. It falls off my shelf because I have it tied to my belt. Have you read The Red Pony?
I've never read The Red Pony, although I love Steinbeck.
It's a short book, 100 pages. And I said, oh, it's a book about a pony.
Does the dog die, John?
Maybe my daughter would like it. So I sat down to read it and I started reading it. And I read it between the hours of 1 and 4 in the morning. And the dog dies.
Spoilers.
Multiple times In fact, there's...
How can the dog die multiple times?
Well, multiple...
Is there a Frankenstein element where the pony's owner keeps reviving him?
Is there one of these that says a horse dies?
I guarantee there is.
Because there's more than one horse that dies. And in fact, I think every horse that you are... Yes, a horse dies. Here it is, right here. Horse deaths are implied or off screen.
That's for a higher level of equine mortality sensitivity or EMS.
Anyway, it was definitely, by the time I got to the end of the book, I was like, well, that is not a book for a horse loving person.
Well, I would not have thought that Omnibus dips too often into the world of animal cruelty because
we're against it.
We're against it. And it's just not usually relevant to say Danger Mouse's The Gray Album or The Yellow Pages.
I wonder if Danger to a Mouse appears on this list.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
DoesTheMouseDie.com. But yeah, there is actually some just terrible treatment of animals by the ancient Romans. And if it gives you any pleasure to listen to this, knowing that the Romans are now conquered and extinct and had their comeuppance, that's great.
Lol.
But maybe we should have a bell that we ring when something bad is going to happen. What if we have like a bull ring trumpet? A mournful trumpet solo that we play before something bad happens to animals. Like, you know, if you're Ernest Hemingway, you're about to love this part. If you're any other human being, you may want to skip 10 seconds.
Every time a bell rings, a rhinoceros gets its way.
A rhinoceros gets its comeuppance. So as I said, you know, well, back to classical times, Europeans were aware that exotic and to them strange animals lived in the continent to the south of them, and
exotic and strange to me even now.
Rhinoceroses were one of them. They were especially interested in legends and accounts of the rhinoceros because the word they would have used, monoceros, you know, we say rhinoceros, nose horn. They often would have said monoceros, one horn. It was the same word they used for unicorn.
Unicorn.
I mean, I think monoceros would be, well, that's Greek and unicorn is Latin, maybe? Vice versa? No, I think that's right.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the myths about, you know, a beautiful a horse with a single horn and all the, you know, the way it interacts with virgins and maidens or the kind of bounties it provides or the magic it contains would have been conflated with their knowledge of the African or Indian rhinoceros, which today seems funny to us because what animals could be more different?
So the pretty horse with a spiral corn.
Friendship is magic.
It predates the rhinoceros. It's some kind of
evolutionarily
thing. Well, no, like people in ancient times, for whatever reason, weren't satisfied with the horse. They had to put an ice cream cone on it. You don't see that in, there's no like unicorn cat.
A cat with one horn?
Yeah. Why a horse has no other horn. There are lots of horned animals.
Every hornless animal could have a horn at it. Yeah. A sloth could be a unicorn.
That's right.
I wonder if our idea of a unicorn is actually just a game of telephone version of an actual one-horned rhinoceros.
Right.
Or other kinds of weird megafauna, because there were, you know, that would have been in living, I mean, the aurochs was stomping around Europe until the 17th century. It didn't have a single horn, but there were big animals with weird horns wandering around that could have gone from history to legend, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's no fossil evidence of a Northern European aminal that would have had
a single horn. No, that's true. But it could have come from...
It's just interesting that dragons and unicorns seem to appear throughout history many different places.
It is thought that the dragon myth might have come from cultural memories of dinosaur bone discovery.
Oh, yeah.
Or of having dinosaurs as pets and vacuum cleaners in your home.
Sure, of course.
As we know, happened. You know, Pliny in particular wrote about the monoceros of Africa. He wrote about how they were the enemy of the elephant. The two greatest animals of Africa, he wrote, were the elephant and the rhino, and they lived in a constant state of rivalry. I think you and I mentioned on Omnibus not long ago that you believed that our local zoo in Seattle still had elephants.
And I was disappointed to find that.
I had to break the news to you that, some neighbor's coalition had drummed them out of town under the theory that maybe no zoo with those, with that acreage should have elephants.
Yeah, what's interesting is that elephants, of course, are very sensitive. But the Woodland Park Zoo still has mountain gorillas, and, you know,
behind glass,
including some that are like old and wise and probably could build a house.
Pass the GED.
So, and they're pretty mad about being in there. I don't know the last time you saw them, but
every time I've been going there since I was a kid, and they have never once looked happy to see me.
No, they don't seem happy.
They don't remember me. Maybe they do remember me, and that's why they're not they're happy. Like, here this is kid.
A rhino and an elephant are both herbivores.
Yes.
And they don't fight one another.
They do not.
Yeah.
As with so many, I mean, there also weren't like animals with one big foot and a dog's head running around Africa, but plenty thought there were.
One big foot and a dog's head?
Yeah, he always had these he had these crazy menageries of like kind of chimerical animals that don't exist.
But like one it wasn't that it had one big foot and three small feet. It was
I think
just
it's just
that it one,
on one
foot
hopping around maybe. Yeah, okay. It's like it's maybe from the Beatles' Yellow Submarine movie.
Or Lowly Worm.
Yeah, it's like it's driving an apple car, I think. So Europe was primed to be interested in all African animals, but rhinos in particular. And the first records of rhinos coming to Europe, sadly, were because Rome loved to bring animals in from the far corners of its vast empire in order to just murder them en masse, sadly.
They were not brought to fight one another in a circle, but just to be killed?
To be fought by gladiators on sand. By AD 354, there were 176 different days of games. Like almost every other day in the calendar had a games.
The other days were reserved for bread.
Yeah, bread some days, then circuses. Now, most of these days were not gladiatorial combat. Fully 103 of those were theater. Can you imagine a kid being like, we're going to the games? And then dad's like, I got tickets for Sophocles. Mm. 64 days were chariot races. Only 10 of them were either animal hunting or combat.
Oh.
But those were the highlights.
Yeah.
Those were like and they were saved for like Saturnalia, you know, around the solstice. The gladiatorial games were obviously, I mean, it's just like today where, you know, you can go to the arena in your town, anytime if you want to see the Wiggles or an exhibit about dinosaur marionettes, but like 16 times a year, it's going to be an NFL game, or 8 times a year, it's going to be an NFL game. 30 times a year, it's going to be a hockey game or whatever. You know, the good ones are rare.
Was the Colosseum used as a theater for Sophocles?
Yeah, the Colosseum or Flavian Amphitheater, I think, had drama performed.
Wow.
But there also, it was used for gladiatorial games. When Titus, in 80 AD, when the Emperor Titus opened the Flavian Amphitheater, which we today call the Roman Colosseum, they actually went through 5,000 animals on the first day. And when I say went through, I guess I should play the bullring trumpet here, because those animals were killed.
How many of them came
to see them die?
Raccoons or like rock pigeons?
There were zero raccoons. No North American animals were represented for obvious reasons.
Right.
Now, it's true that most of them were not big ticket animals. Like that, you know, when they say thousands of animals here.
Did they turn loose like 500 cats?
It was a lot of deers and roebucks.
Oh, right.
You know, and deers and roebucks, you know, where you used to buy, you used to have the catalog, right?
I did. I'm wearing their jeans now.
It was a way for Rome to brag about its far-flung empire that they would get from Britain, deers and dogs would come.
Right. Ibexes.
From Gaul, you'd have bears and wolves because there were still bears in continental Europe. From Egypt, hippos and rhinos and crocodiles. I mean, the great prestige would be from having big cats,
yeah.
You know, lions and tigers or whatnot. Many, you know, there's a whole, when you think about this, when you're going through 5,000 animals a day because of the awful bloodlust of your spectators, it requires a ton of infrastructure to provide that many animals for all these big games.
Because you have to keep feeding them right up until the end.
You have to trap them somewhere. You have to bring them to Rome. You have to keep feeding them, although I think they did not feed, you know, they didn't take great amount of care in feeding them because, you know, an unhealthy animal wouldn't put up much of a fight. And that was great because you're mowing through thousands of them. But, I mean, when you think about those quantities, the London Zoo, this is a comparison I saw in a Jerry Toner book called The Day Commodus Killed the Rhino. The London Zoo has 19,000 animals, but most of them are like salamanders.
Right.
Like 18,800 of them are salamanders, basically.
Right.
They have 200 mammals.
Really? Yes. The rest are just rats and rock pigeons.
Rats don't even count. Rats are mammals. The rest are
I see. Sure.
The rest are the rest are birds and koi and mostly salamanders.
Yeah, I get it.
So, you know, even the London Zoo, the world's biggest zoo, is taking care of 200 mammals, whereas these gladiatorial games had to have behind them an infrastructure that could really, in the year 100 AD, when Trajan was celebrating his victory in the Dacian Wars, 11,000 animals were hunted in this, in his celebratory games.
How many were salamanders?
No salamanders. And this is happening at a time, all these animals have to be trapped and brought in a time without tranquilizer darts. You know, they have to be, and they have to be taken alive. You know, we've done shows about a time when the definition of conservation was mostly, a museum will want this big moose, said Teddy Roosevelt. But here you weren't even, here you had to bring everything back caged. Luckily, you probably had a lot of local talent that you didn't care if got clawed to death in a lot of these hunts, I assume.
Well, what if you just rode the animals back?
Yes, that's what they would do.
They would have to put on a tiger saddle.
It was hard because, like, one of these games, there's like 1,000 ostriches. When you read the extant descriptions of these games, they're written by eyewitnesses, and even they are like, this is insane. He just beheaded all these ostriches and held up the heads to the Senate to be like, you're next. Like, there's all this kind of Trump-level strongman political theater. I mean, that's actually more than Trump. I don't think he ever cut the head off a single ostrich.
Well, and think about what that's saying to the Senate. Not only are you next, but you're a bunch of ostriches.
I didn't even pick one of the cool animals to behead.
Yeah, you're not like a tiger. This says here that Hannibal crossed the Alps with 37 or 38 elephants.
But if he had brought like another 5,000 small deer,
right?
Then you got a games.
Can you imagine if Hannibal crossed the Alps with 5,000 ostriches?
That
would also be a story.
He would have to be driving them ahead of him.
Yeah, right. Or just like intermingled with his troops. Like, but for every two troops, there's an ostrich.
Yeah. But some of these games would have just remarkable spectacle regarding the animals. You know, much of it bloody. I mentioned the sad ostrich beheading. But in, I think one historian mentions a game in AD 202 where the crowd is amazed to see the lights come up on a giant boat.
The lights?
In the center of the arena. Yeah, well, fire.
Right.
In the center of the arena.
A giant boat.
Only to see the boat come apart. It turns out to be like a canvas contraption that is hiding 700 animals. And suddenly, tigers and elephants and deer and all the rest are just running around the arena.
But they weren't even referencing Noah's Ark.
No. They wouldn't have had, well, they could have had Noah's Ark.
I guess so.
I mean, the advent of Christianity is an interesting part of the games. It was not common, actually, to throw Christians to the lions, but the post-Constantine idea
When you say not common, how many times did they throw Christians to the
lions? I mean,
Christians
more than you want to if you're a Christian, but it was the exception and not the rule. It's a handful of oddities. It wasn't like, oh boy, I hope they do the Christians again this year, Dad. But like in post-Constantine Rome, there was a real desire to make these spectacles of the past seem, I mean, they were obviously cruel to animals, but to make them seem debauched and unholy. And so the accounts we get of them are really, really kind of amp up that decadent and evil atmosphere, which is why there's all these stories of humans being martyred, you know, prisoners being martyred, which was not common, in fact. But rhinos were present at a bunch of these games, including the Titus opening the amphitheater and Trajan celebrating his victory over the Dacians. And in fact, these are the first accounts we have of rhino in Europe is
in Rome.
Gladiators hunting them in a Roman amphitheater. And when I say hunt, you know, these are kind of turkey shoots. You know, these are not, you know, there's the animal has to be either in a net or the gladiator has to be above them or something. It's not a fair fight.
They have bad eyesight, right?
Rhinos?
I think so.
Or gladiators?
Well, if you had bad eyesight as a gladiator, you wouldn't. There'd be no like contact lenses.
That's true.
I think it would probably preclude you being an effective gladiator.
Is it like being a fighter pilot?
Yeah. I mean, if a rhino's coming at you, you don't want to have double vision.
I mean, either way, I don't want to have double vision, but it does become more urgent if a rhino is charging at me.
When you were living in Spain, as you famously did you ever go to a bullfight?
I went once because, you know, you were, it kind of felt like a cultural rite of passage, and I was not prepared for what I was going to see. I hated it. I had seen Bugs Bunny cartoons, so I thought I knew what a bullfight was. But no, it turns out there's a series of rounds in which the bull gets tortured and weakened before the guy with the sword comes out.
And then it happens again.
Yeah.
Then again.
Because there's three matadors and three bulls. It's, you know, it's a full night of entertainment. Have you been to a bullfight as well or not?
I had the exact same experience. I went to the bullfight having read The Sun Also Rises enough times and feeling like...
See, you had Hemingway, I had Bugs Bunny.
I was like, well, and I also had Bugs Bunny. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. And the full arena and...
And it does have great music and a fun festival vibe until the...
Super fun, but
until the animal torture begins.
The bloodlust, I had never seen anything like it, and I was just appalled and did not ever want to go again. And when I was invited subsequently, I was like, no, I don't want to go to your weird thing.
I mean, it really is the moment when it caused me to look hard at my culture and think, what are my blind spots where I give something a pass? Because, well, of course, we're just going to slash at this bull for an hour from horseback.
Yours was 10 songs per record of whiny boy whinging record after record after record, year after year.
In the famous mosaic now called the Great Hunt in the Piazza Armerini outside of Rome, we see... It kind of dramatizes the collection of these menageries. We see animals being brought from all over the empire in various kinds of harnesses and nets. And there's a rhino there. There's keepers with ropes holding a rhino. They would be loaded into dark cages, you know, in hopes of keeping them placid, and then loaded onto ships. And some of those ships would make it to Europe, and some of the animals would survive the voyage. And, we have the first record we have of a rhino being brought to Europe is actually before either Titus or Trajan's games. It's Pompey. Oh, actually, I don't know if we know about a rhino in those AD games, but we know that Pompey did bring, Caesar's rival Pompey brought a rhino to some games that he held in 55 BC. What's not clear in this and many of these other cases is what kind of rhino, because...
Sure, there are a few kinds.
Northern India has these two-horned rhinos.
How much easier would it be to trot one all the way from northern India compared to... At least in Africa, you could presumably put it on a boat.
Yeah, and in Africa, actually, the ranges back then, they were actually, you know, north of the Sahara in the savanna areas in Morocco and Algeria, kind of north of the Sahara, they were actually white rhinos back then.
Oh.
So it seems much more likely that in many of these games... it's an African rhino being put on a boat, although you could get the ones from India without a voyage at all, but it's a long walk. They had a wider range as well. Today they're only in a few scattered spots in Nepal and Assam, but at the time, pretty much that whole Ganges plain in what is today Pakistan all the way past Bangladesh, you know, almost to the Burmese border, rhinoceroses grazed in the plains.
Apparently there were elephants in the Atlas Mountains.
There were elephants in the Atlas Mountains?
Yeah, but they were little. Like, not little, but they were only 8 feet tall instead of whatever. You know, normal elephant is 42 feet tall.
There were little rhinos in Indonesia.
Were they really?
Yeah, there were little miniature rhinos running around Java and Sumatra.
Huh.
I mean, I don't know how little. I don't know if they were cute.
It feels like the little rhinos of Indonesia is an art house film.
And oh, how they dance, the little rhinos of Indonesia. Augustus in 29 BC, opening his new temple to Julius Caesar, brought...
Which we talked about just recently.
Yeah, in a recent show, just 2 weeks ago, there was a rhino at those games. No, Titus did have a rhino at his games, because this is the one that there's a detailed account of. The crowd gapes because they've never seen anything, this tank-like creature. And then that quickly goes to boredom because the rhino doesn't want to do anything.
Right.
And this being a time when nobody cares about the rhino's emotions, because, again, he's about to be slaughtered, they start cruelly goading and whipping it. And finally, the rhino has had enough and just charges. And the crowd goes from, they're about to head out to the popcorn stand. And suddenly, this rhino just charges at a bull and just like knocks it in the air like it weighs nothing.
Yeah.
And
go, rhino.
They got their money's worth that day. Well, I don't know. Are we allowed to be for this? A bull got hurt.
Yeah, right. We were just a second ago bemoaning hurt bulls.
But it's okay when a rhino does it.
It's one of those, like, which is the rarer? You always root for the rare one, right?
That's true. Rome's full of bulls.
Yeah.
Not a lot of rhinos. But they were, you know, it happened. So every generation or so, a rhino came in. And maybe you remembered your grandpa talking about that time Pompey brought the rhino. And they were very popular. You know, they're huge. They're hard to kill. You know, of all the animals that gladiators could fight, this one had, like, fight, you know, could murder. These had like 2-inch thick skin. You know, a rhino is almost, you know, even for spears and bows and arrows, it's nearly impenetrable.
How big is a rhino?
I'm picturing like a, so I have been to see the, at the, what was the elephant enclosure at Woodland Park Zoo. They now have a couple rhinos, I believe Indian, and a rhino weighs, like, at the shoulder, a rhino is, like, as tall as a person, five or 6 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
Picturing, like, a small car.
Mm-hmm.
They can weigh over 3 tons. So, you know, next to an elephant, they're going to look dwarfed. And this crowd might have seen elephants before. But, you know, they weigh what a Toyota Corolla does.
Well, it's funny. When people are describing how big an animal is, they often will say, it weighs X.
But
beyond about 300 pounds, I can't tell the difference between a thing that weighs a ton and 5 tons. So it just seems like, oh, 5 tons. Wow. I don't know what that is.
When I was a kid and I was reading Marvel Comics, they would always tell you that, you know, Thor can lift 70 pounds and who else? The Hulk can lift 100 pounds, or sorry, 75 tons, and the Hulk can lift 100 tons. And it was not clear to me at all what that mattered.
Yeah, right.
The most famous games by far at which a rhino appeared happened in 192 AD. The Emperor Commodus held a 14-day spectacle with thousands and thousands of animals. And what was novel about this is for the first time, the emperor himself was in the ring with spear and javelin and bow and arrow.
Whoa. Now, so Joaquin Phoenix got down there.
So Commodus probably best remembered today for being the nutty, out of control, debauched emperor in the movie Gladiator, was in fact, at least in the last couple of years of his life, a nutty, out of control, debauched emperor.
Awesome.
And it's hard to know, you know, we have all these lurid accounts of his, you know, from his youth on of just being terrible. There's a story about him going into the baths one day as a young teen or preteen, finding that the water is not as warm as he would like, and ordering the keeper of the baths tossed into the furnace to help warm it up.
Well, that seems uncool.
It's really, what a Karen, am I right?
That's right, super drag. Can I speak to the manager? Into the furnace.
According to the story, a wily serpent tossed a sheepskin into the furnace.
A serpent did?
A wily servant.
Oh, a servant.
A wily serpent could have.
Uh-huh.
I mean, all serpents are wily.
Goes right.
Redundant. A wily servant ordered a sheepskin thrown into the fire instead, saving the life of the bath's keeper, because young Commodus could smell the burning flesh and think, ha-ha, now it's getting warm. That guy won't make that mistake again. I guess it relies on you not running into that guy.
Exactly.
The next time, like, you're in the baths.
Supermarket.
Didn't I throw you into the furnace? Should we have a beeping sound or something when a bath's keeper gets thrown into the furnace?
I mean, some of us that
does,
really...
Does the bath's keeper die?
That really prize sheepskins might say, please don't throw a sheepskin into a furnace without at least telling me in advance.
But all these lurid accounts are written after his life in a time when, you know, successors may, first of all, you may want crazy exaggerated stories to help sell copies of your book, or, you know, it may please the current powers that be to make the old guys make out to be Caligula or Nero level lunatics.
Mm-hmm.
Commodus did share a birthday with Caligula and was apparently very sensitive about it.
Oh, Well, that's
because
weird.
You think you'd be proud?
Yeah.
I think Caligula had such a bad rep at the time.
Right.
That it was bad association. It's like being born on Hitler's birthday. Mm-hmm. And he didn't, okay. And he did not. So I guess he would order people executed even for having, any mention of Caligula in writing. If you were seen reading anything that had Caligula mentioned, you could get tossed in a furnace.
It really seems like he's a guy to just avoid, right? Like, see Commodus coming, turn the corner.
There's really nothing you could say in that interaction.
It's not going to turn out well.
It's like the Monty Python sketch where the guy has to say Spurge or whatever. the funny thing is that he was this, and this was often commented on by historians, he was the son of Marcus Aurelius.
Right.
Not just a military hero, but a...
one of the great minds.
Yes, a stern and stoic writer and thinker, famous for his moral and intellectual discipline. Not the kind of guy you would expect to have such a wastrel son.
Not the kind of guy you would think would be played by Richard Harris.
But in fact, yeah, exactly. Not exactly the most stoic of leading men. But Richard Harris did outlive Oliver Reed making that movie when it comes to 60s drunks.
True.
It's a tale as old as time, though, that kind of a dad, that kind of a disapproving dad has some son that goes totally off the rails.
Right.
And that is what happened here. Commodus was, in fact, in the history of Rome, the first ever emperor born to a sitting emperor. It had never happened before. He came from a line of five. And I guess in every other case, the previous emperor had been born before his dad was on the throne.
Is there a child that's been born in the White House? This is a Jeopardy question.
Yes.
Who? What president had a kid in the White House?
If you don't count Jackie's tragic stillbirth,
right?
She would have been the last pregnant first lady. I think it might be Cleveland's daughter Ruth. That might be the last White House birth, because if you'll recall, Cleveland was a creep who always joked about his friend's hot daughter. Can't wait till she's old enough. And then his friend's daughter turned 19 and they were quickly married in the White House. Which, you know, if you're the president, they let you get away with that.
Back then.
And maybe now. So Commodus was, had kind of a unique stature of being born to royalty, but he also made a lot of enemies in his time. His biographer Dio Cassius was actually present at these games in which he fought the Rhino, and it's clear that he's writing in hindsight, mm-hmm. And he talks about the things that Commodus did to annoy powerful groups. He annoyed the Senate by ending his father's wars with the tribes north of the Danube. He just kind of sued for peace and ended these costly wars, which might have been good foreign policy, but again, annoyed the Senate. Then it was a real populist who taxed the wealthy, and he didn't just throw these astounding parties for the common man, but he also redistributed wealth to them.
Further annoying the Senate.
Further annoying, yeah. Now annoying not just the elected people, but the wealthy people, which there's a lot of overlap. But in the last 2 years of his life, he seems to have gone somewhat off the rails. He started to mint coins with himself, identified with the demigod Hercules, and in fact started carrying around a club and wearing a lion skin to functions.
Oh, that seems weird.
Even by the standards of a depraved Roman emperor. Yeah, you don't imagine somebody carrying a Hercules-like club to a party.
Was he a buff dude?
I think so. We have accounts of him preparing for this great hunt, and apparently he worked out. He had elite Persian bowmen and Moroccan javelin hunters brought to his Roman villa, where they taught him their arts. And obviously these riders have a responsibility to butter up the guy in power, but all the accounts say that he just never missed.
That's cool. He sounds like a cool bro.
100% accuracy. He's not a cool bro. John.
Wait. 100% accuracy. That seems a little inflated.
Yeah, you're getting into Kim Jong-il hole-in-one territory here. On the first day of his, on the first day of these 14-day games, in which it's been announced that he himself is going to slaughter all the animals, he actually does not fight in the sand as a gladiator might. he's up on a big catwalk above the floor of the amphitheater.
Oh, that's lame.
The animals are below him kind of in little cells that kind of divide them into small herds. So the crowd can just kind of watch him walk by on the catwalk, throwing javelins and shooting arrows really at point blank range. Even when he's not on the catwalk, even when he's at animal level, they're just being brought to him and he's walking right up next to them and then firing an arrow. Or they've been placed in nets for him to, but he's going through them at great speed. You know, he shows up on the first day wearing, you know, this amazing spectacle of these things. He's wearing these purple robes with gold stars. He's got his Hercules club and lionskin. He takes all that off to dress himself as Mercury. At the time, a lot of gladiators would identify them, shave their heads to match the look of Isis, in honor of her, or they would match Mercury's look because he was speedy, mm-hmm, I guess, mm-hmm, which is a valuable trait when you're fighting tigers and whatnot.
Even on a catwalk.
But one of these accounts, you know, of these turkey, you know, on day one, he just kills 100 bears.
Kills 100 bears?
Now, that's a terrible thing from an animal rights perspective, but, you know, you got to admire his showmanship.
It's like shooting fish in a barrel. It's just shooting
100 bears in a barrel.
Shooting bears in official.
Shooting bears by an official.
There it is.
Even your post-Soviet states, you never saw. I bet you never saw 100 bears killed by one guy.
Not 100 bears, no.
There's one story from this, you know, he wants to kill, he's bragged that he's going to kill a tiger, an elephant, a hippo, and a giraffe. He does it all. One story has 100 lions emerging at one point into the ring through a trap door. He throws...
one javelin and it kills all 100 lions.
No, he throws 100 javelins in an orderly fashion, and the lions are laid down in rows neat enough so that the people in the stands can count and see that it actually was 100. Now, again, these are stories that have been exaggerated to flatter the power-crazed Roman emperor. But it's the kind of story you could tell. You know, it's based on some germ of truth of his amazing prowess against 100 lions.
I don't know that much about lions, but I imagine if you had 100 lions all in the same, under the Colosseum cage, that they would start to fight one another. They don't seem like they would recognize that they were all like bros and about to go face a single enemy.
I wonder if they've just been emaciated into compliance. Like, they're so starved, they're not fighting each other or really jumping at old Commodus with his quiver of 100 javelins.
Maybe they had been given milk of the poppy by one of Circe's maesters.
It's possible. You know, I would imagine you want to thread some needle between entertaining the crowd and not, I mean, in this case, especially, it's not just one of your best gladiators is going to go. It's actually Emperor Commodus himself.
How many lions do you think were really there?
You think this is a story about him taking out four lions and the crowd clapping and it becomes a 10 by 10 grid instead of a 2 by 2 grid?
I just feel like 100, no. 20, maybe.
The highlight of the games is him killing a rhino, but again, it's... You know, that's hard to do.
The highlight of the games isn't killing 100 lions?
These games are so good that 100 bears is day one.
Wow. But one rhino is the grand finale.
By the way, Toner's book that I read is a very interesting take on how, you know, we also see the games through this post-Christian lens of, you know, look at this awful kind of bread and circuses spectacle that was required to, you know, cow the population into... servitude. But in fact, you know, the games were very complex and served to really emphasize, they brought the country together by emphasizing what Rome felt were its inherent values, you know, its virtue, its loyalty, you know, the power and the reach of its empire, its bravery. You know, people were kind of watching a society building, community building spectacle. I don't want to have a warm and fuzzy take on some dude killing 100 bears in 5 minutes.
This was all about community, man.
if you weren't there, you don't know. You just don't know what the circus was like.
Yeah.
But after that, Europe was rhino free.
Oh, he got rid of the pestilence of rhinos.
Yeah. What a hero. This rhino repellent sure works. I mean, for a few centuries, a rhino would show up every 50 to 100 years. It would quickly die, and then Europe would once again be rhino-free.
Right.
And after the Roman Empire falls and the games are replaced by Christianity, once praying replaces killing bears, how about that, anti-religionists? Think about how many bears were saved.
Yeah. How do you answer that, atheists on Reddit?
Finally, about 1,400 years later, rhinos return to Europe. Nature is healing.
But this time as tourists.
This time as tourists. That's actually not incorrect. The practice of giving exotic animal pets to potentates continued, and it extended into the age of imperialism and colonization. You know, the Portuguese got to India, where, again, rhinos were thick on the ground compared to today. And a sultan in what is today Gujarat, Gujarati pundit,
Mughal.
Mughal, exactly. Gives to no less than Afonso de Albuquerque, the Portuguese governor of India, I think for whom the New Mexico City is now named, even though I don't think he ever made it out there.
I don't think he did, but...
Correct us in the comments if we're wrong.
I don't think Cincinnatus ever made it to Cincinnati.
I know George Washington was never in Seattle. So he gifts a rhino to the Portuguese governor general of India. This rhino is sent to King Manuel I of Portugal all the way to Europe and arrives safely. His name is Ulysses, by the way. That's nice. That's what I think Albuquerque has named him.
Is this his brave tale?
That's right.
Or the tale of him being brave?
I sing of horns and of the man. Manuel I, being a right-thinking 16th century king, decides he's going to give that rhino to who else? Pope Leo X.
Oh, wow. This rhino's making the rounds.
What do you give the guy? He's being regifted. This is like you getting omnibus stuff to your daughter to your family on Christmas morning.
What do you give the pope that has everything?
He did not have a rhino.
So back to Rome, though.
Rome, the place where all rhinos go to die. And it turns out the curse holds. In a shipwreck off the Italian coast, the boat sinks, the rhino has been tied up and is unable to swim to safety. Now, in some accounts, the rhino is actually stuffed and lives a happy life in the Vatican as a stuffed rhino. But modern historians are skeptical just because what we know about 16th century taxidermy makes it extremely unlikely that any actual good preservation of a shipwrecked rhino could have happened.
Maybe the shipwrecked rhino was featured in the Vatican for 2 weeks before becoming intolerably...
You have to remember how bad things would have smelled in a palace back then anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
So you could have a rotting rhino for quite a while before anybody is like, that's not breakfast, is it?
No.
But during this brief time, either, when he was being gawked at in Lisbon or when possibly he was mounted in the Pope's presence. And, back then a lot of people got mounted in the Pope's presence, I'll tell you what. A written description was made, which made its way to none other than Albrecht Dürer.
Sure.
The great Northern European artist and engraver.
Who had never seen a rhino in person.
Well, here's the thing. You got a whole continent full of people who had never seen a rhino in person. Now, Dürer is best known probably for his engravings of Adam and Eve, or especially the praying hands. Can you picture this?
Sure, I know them well.
That classic Dürer work.
I go to a lot of Mennonite homes.
They always have that picture. Are you aware that one of Dürer's most famous and highly sought after works by collectors is his engraving of a rhinoceros? Is this new to you?
When you say highly sought after, are there collectors fighting over this one, or are there multiples of it?
There are very few impressions of the original. The first edition impressions are, he was a printmaker, so a bunch of prints could have been made, but so few survive that one went at auction recently for like $860,000, the most ever paid for a Dürer of any description.
I'm looking at his rhinoceros right now, and it considering he never saw one in person, pretty good rendition of a rhinoceros.
See, that's my takeaway. This is often used as a story of the crazy game of telephone that leads to this bizarre chimera that he draws, but it's actually, I think, a pretty decent rhinoceros, given it that he couldn't have seen the proportions.
No, it looks, it's recognizably a rhinoceros. It doesn't have any tentacles. It's a fanciful rhinoceros.
He has upgraded the rhinoceros quite a bit. If you'll notice, there have been accounts of its thick skin, which here have seem to have become armor.
Armored plates.
It's literally got a breastplate. It's got a gorget or a throat protector. You can see what seem to be rivets, which very few animals, in my understanding, actually have.
Chainmail.
There's all these little kind of horned things on its back that animals don't. And then its legs are scaled.
Yeah.
Either as if it's wearing chainmail on its lower body, or it's some kind of a lizard or something.
He looks kind of like an anteater in the face, and they wouldn't have had anteaters either, would they? Maybe that was among the 5,000 animals that were killed. They brought anteaters.
He's certainly more likely to have seen a picture of an anteater than a rhino.
Right.
I guess. It's possible that what the, you know, the seams and the rivets in the armor are a misinterpretation of seeing what are the folds in the skin of an Indian rhino at a distance. You might think that the folds in its skin, you know, and I'm getting to an age where, you know, I have enough folds in me that if you saw me at the beach, you might think.
I don't think, know if you'd think you were armored.
It's quite the opposite.
Why is that man carrying milk bags all over his? Well, you know, even Kipling had a hard time describing a rhino.
Are you talking about the Just So story?
I sure am.
Well, that's a story. In that story, he also has, I guess Kipling mostly is interested in the texture of its coat.
Which it gets by scratching, trying to scratch an itch.
It takes off its bathing suit and gets enough sand in it that he's scratching his sandy swimsuit and it all gets stuck in there. But I don't think that, I mean, the pebble texture of a rhino is maybe similar to a guy with a lot of sand in his jock. I don't know. I can see that.
The thing is that Dürer would not have seen a picture of a anteater because anteaters are a New World animal. And he did the rhino in 1505, so...
Are all anteaters New World?
There's
aardvarks in Africa, but no...
No anteaters.
No anteaters, huh?
Maybe aardvark is what it looks more like.
It's also possible, and this is one historical theory, that there actually were accounts or maybe even illustrations of... that Ulysses had some kind of armor placed on him to make him a better show.
You know what's hilarious?
And that could be what Dürer is depicting. What's hilarious?
An aardvark. Have you looked at an aardvark lately?
They're pretty good.
They are hilarious.
What's the funniest animal?
Platypus.
I mean, a platypus is really the only animal that people, scientists legit thought was a prank.
Yeah.
Like, nope. Nice try, Bob. The funny thing about Dürer's rhino is because of the relative dearth of rhinoceroses in Europe, which again, we've commented on, this became the standard depiction of rhinoceros in the West for 250 years.
Whoa.
Alessandro de' Medici decided to put a rhinoceros in his family emblem as a sign of his, you know, strength and resilience. And so he's got an armored Dürer fanciful rhinoceros in his emblem. Similar, the obelisk in front of Paris's Church of the Sepulchre, which was built, I think, sometime in the 17th century, has an armored rhinoceros in front of it. You have to wonder why people, they were still fascinated with it as a, it's, you know, it's mentioned in the Bible. And I wonder if that leads to some of its post-Christian popularity. It's used as an example of a big, scary, exotic thing.
Well, I think there's probably a built-in desire and hope that you could find a war animal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the horse is amazing for a lot of things. Including battle. But if you had a armored tank of an animal with a giant horn on its head.
Is Alessandro de' Medici just be like, I'd be riding this into battle.
Yeah. I would think that these kings would have sent many, many budding zoologists out trying to get like, hey, can we get 50 of these? We'd be unstoppable.
And they're not wrong, except, you know, they're very difficult to train. I think. I'm sure the U.S. Army has tried multiple times. Similarly, you can go to the Pisa Cathedral and see the west doors have a bronze rhinoceros on them. And again, it's Dürer's crazy one with rivets. They appeared in textbooks well into the 20th century, with the result that a young Salvador Dali grew up thinking that rhinoceroses had breastplates and rivets and incorporated them into some of his surrealist canvases. Yeah, so... it's kind of funny, this attempt at realism in art turns out to be so wacky that it becomes the basis for a lot of 20th century surrealism. Now, what ended the reign of Durer's rhinoceros was Miss Clara. In the year 1741, another rhino arrived in Europe, and this one did not get shipwrecked.
Okay.
This one survived to make the rounds.
It took that many? It took 200 years to get another rhino?
Yeah, for 200 years, Durer's, there was no Amazon back then, you know? In 1738, a Dutch East India Company officer adopted a baby rhino whose mother had been killed by hunters. She was super tame, and, you know, I'm sure he hand-raised her and bottle-fed her, and so she just kind of wandered around his estate as a pet. And at some point, he sold her, gave her to a Dutch sea captain who brought her back to the Netherlands. And when she arrived in Rotterdam in 1741, she was an immediate sensation, by far the most popular and beloved rhinoceros of her time.
Mm-hmm. Far outpacing the complete lack of rhinoceroses that rivaled.
She was both the most and least beloved rhinoceros in Europe. She was immediately exhibited in the Low Countries and wowed crowds in Rotterdam and Antwerp and Brussels, and it was decided that she should be sent all over Europe. So she was put into a wooden carriage. I mean, she's quite tame. She's not traumatized by all this. She's put into a wooden carriage drawn by 8 horses. The carriage has very small windows because we don't want non-paying customers to get a glimpse. She's rubbed down with fish oil every day to keep her rhino leather nice and supple. And she,
I wonder what she thought of that.
Goes, I bet she's into it. No?
Fish oil? Maybe.
I don't know. She goes everywhere. She's taken all over Germany. The Holy Roman Emperor visits her. For 17 years, she tours Europe. And in fact, you know, she becomes a celebrity, an international celebrity. She goes to Italy. She finally survives a visit to Italy, unlike, you know, exorcising a lot of rhino ghosts of the past. I think rhinos become so popular that songs and poems are written about her. Women in France start to wear their wigs in rhino-like shapes.
Oh, I've seen that. I didn't know what that was about.
I assume it's the horn.
Yeah.
I assume the wig is not the shape of a full rhinoceros body. She goes as far east as Bohemia and Poland and Scandinavia. Finally, she comes back to London. Sadly, this is where she dies in April of 1758. And
that's what sparked the American Revolution.
Yes. If not, a traumatized British population decides to raise the tax on tea, and the rest is history. The French actually named a boat after her. I don't know if it was the Miss Clara. No, it was the Rhinoceros. That makes more sense.
Mm-hmm.
So after, I guess you can see various phases of different levels of encounter here with new science or culture. You know, first you kill it.
Sure.
In small quantities to make sure you're not threatened on your catwalk. Then you paint it and exoticize it and get everything wrong about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally you befriend it, but still exploit it, I guess. We don't get to a fourth stage where the rhinoceroses and the Europeans live in peace. But again, that hasn't happened with many of the other colonized nations either.
Well, and I feel like once again, you've effectively described my relationship history. And that concludes Rhinos in Europe. Entry 1069.JB3910. Certificate number 27983 in the omnibus. Futurelings, in the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era, use your prehensile rhino horn to tap out Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram archives at Omnibus Project. Our handles were at Ken Jennings and at John Roderick. You can email us through a time portal at theomnibusproject@gmail.com.
You have to provide the time portal. We don't maintain a wormhole.
You can hang out with other futurelings, other rhino baiting futurelings, wherever you type in the word futureling, follow where it guides you. You can, and please do support the show at patreon.com/omnibusproject. There is almost no way Ken and I are going to be able to afford the white rhino that we hope to keep here as a pet in the bunker.
I guess we should have talked more about modern rhino conservation efforts.
Yeah.
Or at least emphasized that we are against the poaching of rhino for Asian medicine.
Yeah, apparently the rhino horn is most popular in Vietnam.
Is that true?
Yeah.
The funny thing is it's just keratin.
Yeah.
Like on a cellular level, it's basically like you're eating hair. There's nothing magical.
Maybe what we should do is collect hair from barbershop floors.
Press it?
Press it into rhino-shaped horns and then, you know, bootleg, sell them on the black market in Vietnam.
Do we tell people it's not rhino horn?
Profit. No, we don't tell them.
There's an initiative going on right now to inject rhino horns with dye and this formula they use to kill ticks, which is the rhinos don't mind, and the little birds that peck off the rhinos don't mind, and the vultures that eat the dead rhinos don't mind, but which is fairly toxic to humans.
Oh, and so, it makes your rhino horn soup taste terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it won't kill you, but it'll lead to all kinds of cramping and nausea and other ill effects.
I like that idea.
The criticism is that it won't work because the person poaching there's enough middlemen in this economy that the person poaching the rhino does not care if months later a Vietnamese man gets very angry at you.
Yeah, it's more of a prank.
it's not a great prank. Classic prank. You don't get to enjoy it since it's happening to a wealthy Vietnamese man
right. Thousands
of miles away from your village.
Well, Ken and I, as we work on our keratin, counterfeit keratin horn business, support our efforts at patreon.com/omnibus. And you can mail us things to P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155. Looks like you're working your way through the mailbag there.
Yes, Sharon sent you a daily box calendar. It says, this should make you really happy, John. It's called Pun Intended, and it has a different cute pun
every
day of the year.
What a terrible gag gift. This is a white elephant Christmas I never signed on for.
Here are some classic... I don't know if this is a pun. I have two unwritten rules. One, blank. Two, blank. Is that a pun?
I don't think it's a pun.
It relies on punctuation more than phonetics.
But it's hilarious.
My clothes are so wrinkly that people have started thinking that I'm iron deficient. Maybe not a pun again. This one is a pun.
It's the type of thing you would say, though.
Too many people are eating their salads plain. I feel like that needs to be addressed. Addressed.
Oof.
So 362 more.
But you felt of the three examples they gave, two were not puns at all, and one of them barely met your muster.
Well, a dress is not even they've just added a syllable to, maybe if it was Italian dressing, you could say a dress, then the is doing something racist against Italians.
Hey.
Thank you so much, Sharon. I think maybe we should just keep this here and maybe read one occasionally.
Yeah, we'll hang it up here on the wall of the bunker.
And annoy you. And then Celia, you were just asking me today where I do crosswords. Celia sent us some puzzles from Puzzled Pint. You solve a puzzle to find a bar each month, and then you try to... And then I guess you go to the bar and you have to solve all these puzzles? It's fun whether you drink or not. I mean, it's probably a lot easier if you don't.
Yeah, that's what a lot of drinkers say, though. Hey, it's fun whether you drink or not to sit around this dark bar until 1 a.m. with a bunch of drunks.
Here's my thing. I'm having fun doing crossword puzzles, whether I'm drunk or not.
Yes.
I'm not sure if the bar would help or not.
I prefer to do crossword puzzles in the bath.
But Celia actually hosts these such events in Detroit and says they have them in Seattle.
Okay.
She finds all omnibus episodes interesting, so she doesn't seem very reliable. There's no way they're all interesting.
Most are mostly interesting.
Thank you so much, Joey. I'm actually going to do these puzzles. I'm not even going to let John have them. You can keep the pun calendar.
Hey.
I'll give you the word search.
Hey.
Hey. I don't want the word search.
The thing is, you're going to start working on one. You're going to find it's ridiculously easy for you. And you're going to be like, oh, here, these are for kids. And you're going to hand it to me, and I'm going to work on it for 3 weeks.
No, I like doing easy puzzles. Yes, I think this must... Well, no. Is this... Is this the same puzzle? Oh, no, it's a different one. She wrote her... Oh, no, it is the same puzzle.
Oh, so we have two of the same one.
Yes, you can do this one. I don't know if it's harder.
It's puzzle, Dad.
That's the one that she wrote the letter on the back of.
Oh, you gave me the scrawled one.
It's the rare autographed collector's edition.
Hmm. Don't ask me in text speak.
How many letters? Three?
66 across. Three.
IDK.
IDK. Okay.
Right?
Yeah. 67 across. Five letters. Pastry maker.
Somebody right now is looking at the time left in this entry to see if it's like an hour. Like, are they going to do the whole thing? Pastry maker? How many letters?
Five.
Baker? I'm not actually sure.
You're baker.
There's other things it could be, maybe.
Yeah.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We don't even know how long it's going to take John to do that puzzle.
I have no idea how long this episode's going to go, because we could still blow it.
What's 12 across? We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. If the worst comes soon, though, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word to you. But if Providence allows, we hope to return and be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.